light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
Good afternoon, KSQD listeners. It's every other Sunday again, and this is Ronnie Lipschitz. You're listening to Sustainability Now, a radio show focused on environment, sustainability, and social justice in the Monterey Bay region, California, and the world. Today happens to be the first anniversary of this show's launch, and I'm celebrating by doing another episode. So I'm pleased to welcome my guest today, Santa Cruz architect Mark Premack. Hi, Mark. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Ron. Nice to hear you.
Okay. We're going to talk about the housing crisis in Santa Cruz, the county, and California more broadly, with a focus on accessory dwelling units, or as they're called, ADUs, in backyards over garages and attachments to houses. Mark Premack has lived and worked in Santa Cruz since the 1970s, served on the city council and on various committees and commissions. He's author of Divisible Cities, Acting Local in a Transient World, and writes a regular column on local matters for the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Premack has been a tireless advocate for ADUs since early in the millennium, or maybe even before. So, Mark, before we get around to talking about ADUs, maybe you could fill us in on your background and talk about your education, professional history, work, and life in Santa Cruz.
Okay, well, I'm from someplace else, as are most Santa Cruzans. I was born in Rhode Island. I grew up there and went to architecture school in Providence, a place called Rhode Island School of Design, and then transferred to a school in London, lived in London for a few years, and then came to Santa Cruz to visit my sister, Sarah, who had moved here. I'd never been to California before, and she and her husband, Cliff, showed me around, and I kind of fell in love with Santa Cruz and California, and next year, 1976, I emigrated here. And I wasn't really interested in architecture so much, but I met some very interesting people in Santa Cruz: Paige Smith, Paul Lee, Alan Chadwick, Roy Rydell, people who were engaged in community. And it was through that engagement in community that I got back involved in architecture and in urban planning and in the community.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
That's about it.
Okay.
But the involvement in the community led to volunteering to be on various committees. So I started with the Historic Preservation Commission. I've been involved in trying to save some local landmarks, the Tree Circus, and various other places. And from the zoning board, from the Historic Preservation Commission, I went to the zoning board, which was later folded into the Planning Commission. And I was on the zoning board, which kind of adjudicated development projects, you know, weighed the pros and cons of everything that came through. And you know, as planning got more and more politicized, I got more politicized as well. And so in 2000, I ran for city council and was on the council for 4 years. And it was a one stint on the council. I was an advocate for affordable housing, even in the wealthier neighborhoods of Santa Cruz. And so I think that had a lot to do with the fact that I only served one term. But I was still engaged in housing issues and planning issues, and spent some time on the Planning Commission in recent years. And after the earthquake, I was part of Vision Santa Cruz. So I've just been around and felt that I had certain skills and abilities, and wanted to apply them for the benefit of the community.
If
this is just going to become a segue from one thing to another, I could segue to ADUs. When I was on the zoning board,
actually,
in the late 80s, often at zoning board meetings, there would be three or even four agenda items of people who had been busted for having illegal units on their property. It was a time of a kind of almost like vigilante planning, where in single-family neighborhoods in Santa Cruz, people were going out hunting down illegal garage conversions and studio apartments and reporting them to the planning department and the people who own them. And their tenants would have to come to the zoning board and plead for mercy and ask for forgiveness. And the rules were so onerous and so tight that there was very little we could do about it. So I became an advocate for rewriting the rules and making it possible for people to first legalize and then to create ADUs. And it was a very slow process. There's a lot of resistance to it. And it wasn't until I was on the city council in 2000 that another council member and friend, Scott Kennedy, suggested that there was probably one thing I could accomplish in 4 years on the council, and what would I like to do with what would I like that one thing to be? And I told him, I want to make Santa Cruz safe for ADUs, for people to create and live in small units in our neighborhoods. And so that began an effort to rewrite the ordinances, and we came up with a model ordinance that was adopted by a lot of communities, not just in California, but across the country. And so the state in the last few years finally catching up with Santa Cruz in a way. Santa Cruz has kind of fallen behind a little bit. There's a lot of kind of reaction to this kind of housing. And so there are steps taken, you know, it's three steps forward, two steps back. But we're, with the help of the state now, we're hopefully moving forward and toward encouraging people to create additional housing in single-family neighborhoods.
Well, let's come back to all of that in a moment. What I think before we proceed any farther, can you give us a definition of what an ADU actually is?
Okay. Well, the initial model, of course, was the detached two-car garage back of a property in the old 40s and 50s and 60s neighborhoods in Santa Cruz, where people would. Maybe the garage had a washing machine and a dryer in it, and so it had some plumbing, and people would go in a weekend and rig up a bathroom and a kitchen and then rent it to whoever, you know. And so garages were converted, whether they were detached garages or attached garages in, like, the 60s neighborhoods, you know, where everybody had their ranch houses with their attached garages. Mm-hmm. And people had a family room. They would, that could be walled off from the rest of the house. They would turn that into a living space. Because the thing about Santa Cruz is that zoning in Santa Cruz is what I call Leave It to Beaver zoning. You know, it's single family. Two-thirds, three-quarters of all our residential land is zoned for families, but only one-quarter of our population are families. And so the zoning doesn't match the need that people have for housing. And so so over the years, people adapted single-family homes to their needs. And as housing got more and more expensive, creating a second unit, especially if you could do it quietly and cheaply, was a way to augment your income and to make it possible for you to afford to live in Santa Cruz. So there are a lot of people who are doing this and are doing it very quietly. And the planning department rightly had a policy of kind of like don't ask, don't tell. They didn't go looking for illegal units. They only responded. They were required to respond to complaints. So if you had an illegal unit and you were on good terms with your neighbors, I used to say when I was on the zoning board that zoning violations make good neighbors. As long as everybody has one, they're tolerant of each other. So in funky Santa Cruz, everybody had some violation. They were doing something they weren't supposed to be doing. So everybody was pretty tolerant. So as long as everybody was tolerant of your converted unit, life went on. It's when a new person moved into the neighborhood and they just spent a lot of money for the house that they bought, and they thought they lived in a she-she neighborhood, and they looked around and there was a garage conversion next door. They figured, well, before I get too friendly with my neighbor, before I feel guilty about busting them, I think I'll call now, an anonymous call. And so that's what we were seeing on the zoning board. We were seeing people who had just made the big move to buy a house. They might, a lot of these people were actually living in their little units and figuring, you know, they had their financial plan. They were going to live in their own unit, rent out the main house for 5 or 10 years, hoping that one day they'd be able to enjoy the big house. And these people suddenly found themselves being told that they had to convert their income source and their ADU back into a garage. And so that's sort of where things moved. And for me, the driving force was, you know, demographics. I mean, who's here? What are their needs? And there was a lot of resistance. Again, people who it's the, you know, zoning was created to enforce segregation. People didn't want, homeowners didn't want to be mixing it up with renters. They wanted everybody, you know, to be very homogenous in their communities. But it wasn't working for us, you know, especially, you know, as people, As property prices rose and rose, people who worked in Santa Cruz who were fortunate enough to get into housing when it was still affordable could see the writing on the wall. They couldn't afford to stay in Santa Cruz. Their retirement really was their house. They had to sell their house and leave in order to retire. And that's it's a terribly destabilizing thing. I mean, but their view of ADUs was, well, this is, you know, student housing and, you know, cars parked on the front lawn and parties on the weekend. And so there's this resistance and this image of second units as a social hazard. And so when I was on the city council and trying to push this through, we said, well, let's reframe ADUs. Let's not talk about illegal units, and let's not talk about student parties. Let's talk about our own kids who are getting older and going to Cabrillo or maybe even UCSC or want to coming back from college and want to make a start here in Santa Cruz with the price of housing. ADU is a place that they can have some autonomy. They don't have to go back into their own bedrooms, you know, and live with mom and dad. They can have some autonomy. And let's think about, another term for ADU is granny units. Let's think about, you know, granny. Let's think about our aging population. As I said, so many of us came here from someplace else, and our parents stayed behind. And as our parents got older, that became a real burden to that distance between ourselves and our elderly family. And so, to have an ADU, a granny unit, where your age, you know, the grandma can actually come and live. Have you know the autonomy that they want or can handle, you know, the independence, but be close at hand. That's, you know, obviously that's much closer to the traditional family, where the, you know, multi-generational family. That's a very healthy thing, I believe. Being somebody who, you know, lives next door to my 95-year-old mother-in-law, I think it's a very healthy thing. So we started framing it as an opportunity for people who owned houses to actually make their lives better. For themselves, for their parents, for their children, and then of course, you know, a lot of these people are becoming or have become empty nesters. So you have people facing retirement who are living in three-bedroom houses, you know, and have the burden of maintaining that house rather than sell that house and move out of state or someplace else when they retire. They can move into their ADU. And they can still enjoy their garden, their fruit trees, their neighbors, the neighborhood, the town that they know and love, and get income from the main house. So we pitched it as a way of, you know, in a way of Santa Cruz maturing and adjusting and adapting to changing times. And it was, I believe, a very successful program. We made some compromises along the way because we needed, you know, this takes 4 votes on a city council, and there were, you know, conservative people on the council who needed to be mollified, and so we didn't go as far as we could have gone, but we did the best we could, and we started a program that, as I said, was emulated by many communities in the state. We then got into some trouble in that It's kind of like, as I said, two steps forward, three, you know, one step back, or however many. But at some point, somebody got the bright idea to have a rental inspection program to go out into Santa Cruz and start busting every illegal unit in the town. And so we started losing units. And
Mark, I need to take a break, so stop for a second, okay? All right. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz and KSQD.org, streaming on the internet. Over to you, Dan.
All right. Thanks, Ronnie. This is KSQD Santa Cruz, and we'd like to let you know that daytime beach closures are in effect throughout this Labor Day weekend. Beaches in the unincorporated area of Santa Cruz County will be closed from Saturday at 5 a.m. through Monday at 5 p.m., and that's the same with Santa Cruz City beaches. Beach crossings are allowed to access the ocean for water activities, including surfing, swimming, kayaking, and paddleboarding, and then they remain open for public use on Saturday and Sunday outside of those hours. Additionally, most state beaches and parks are closed or have restrictions due to the ongoing CZU Lightning Complex fires. And with fires still burning throughout northern Santa Cruz County, air quality can also be an issue. And for the latest air quality information, visit airnow.gov. And that's just a reminder that beaches in the city and county are closed from 5 a.m. through 5 p.m. tomorrow, Monday, Labor Day. And you are listening to Sustainability Now here on KSQD. And now it's back to the show.
Okay. Hi, this is Ronnie Lipschitz. You're listening to Sustainability Now, as the man said. And my guest today is Santa Cruz architect Mark Premack. And we're having a conversation about housing in Santa Cruz, and in particular, the role of accessory dwelling units in addressing what has become something of a housing crisis. Mark, I have two questions to consider. Okay. The first one is, to what degree do you think the university or the you know influx of students contributed to the housing shortage in the city? And the second one is, how successful were your efforts in the early part of the 2000s in terms of numbers of ADUs?
Okay, well, the let me answer the second one first, because that's a short one. I think that in the years immediately following the creation of the revised ordinance, I think somewhere between 400 and 500 ADUs were created, and the city had a pilot program where they actually paid. They were going to pay for 6 architects to pick real clients, and they were going to pay the architects to design 6 model ADUs. The idea being that they'd have prototypes that other people could use so they could save the cost of hiring their own designers and architects. And the idea was to have the architects design a range of types, you know, 2-story, you know, above a garage, ones on alleys, etc. And you know, architects suffer from narcissism, and everybody wanted to design, you know, the beautiful, amazing, modern structure. Nobody wanted to tackle garage conversions. And so I was on the city council at the time. It would have been a conflict of interest for me to get paid to be one of the architects on this program. So I volunteered to be the 7th architect and designed a garage conversion, and I sat down with builders, and we looked at, you know, what is the most economical way of getting the plumbing in, the fire separation, the structural work that we have to do to make the structure sound by residential standards, and we came up with a design for a garage conversion. And again, this was about maybe 2005. And I designed it for actually my bookkeeper, who's a single mom whose teenage sons were going to Cabrillo, and she acted as her own general contractor, and soup to nuts, her fees to the city, construction, etc. It cost her $38,000 to convert a garage into a studio apartment. And her son lived in it while he was at Cabrillo, and the last I checked, there was a single mom living there, and that's what I call affordable housing. So that was the goal, and that was the ideal, to make it really easy for people to convert structures to ADUs. Last year we built in the same city, Santa Cruz, we built an ADU for a client, that ADU cost $350,000. So I bring that up to say that the cost of creating ADUs depends tremendously on the city and the government that you're dealing with, in terms of where you're creating it and how you're creating it. So cost has a tremendous amount to do with the bureaucracy. Now, to answer your question about UCSC, I mean, there's no question that that a university that houses at best half of its students expects that the other half are going to live nearby in the city, in our case, the city of Santa Cruz. And the thing about UC is that UC happens generally in metropolitan areas like UCLA or UC Berkeley or UC Santa Barbara, or, you know, where there are whole neighborhoods and whole areas or large metropolitan areas that that can absorb the student population. And we never had that in Santa Cruz. And so there's obviously a lot of pressure on housing in Santa Cruz. A lot of those single family houses have 6 or 8 students living in them. And we have very few working families who can afford to live in Santa Cruz. And it's been a challenge to our schools. We've had school closures. It's been a real challenge. And what has made it particularly onerous for Santa Cruz is that in real estate, people talk about comps. You want to sell your house, you look at what comparable houses are selling for, and that establishes the value of the house. And that's something very similar happens with rents. And when the university charges the equivalent of $2,400 a month for a room in a dorm that two people are living in with a bathroom down the hall, and then people are responsible for getting their own food on top of that, that sets a comp for rents in Santa Cruz. So the student population is largely responsible for out of town speculative real estate investors buying homes in Santa Cruz, renting them to students. I'll give you an example. I live on off of Western Drive near the university. There's a very funky house nearby that just went on the market. It went on the market for over $1 million, and the real estate ad said previously rented. This is what is really a 3-bedroom house that's had some conversions to it. Previously rented for $6,600 a month. And that's what people can get from students. You can't get that from a working family in Santa Cruz. So students have impacted housing in Santa Cruz simply by their numbers, their sheer numbers, overloading the market, and by the amount of rent that they're prepared to pay compared to the rent that they have to pay on campus. And so in the early days, when the university was first came to Santa Cruz, there were those in Santa Cruz who warned that this would not work unless the university housed 2/3 of their students. It's public record. You know, it's history. This university was warned that there would be mayhem if the university didn't commit itself to housing 2/3 of its students, and that was largely ignored by pretty much every politician and every university administrator from then on. So, yes, it's a huge problem. And what's very interesting now is that house down the street is for sale. Why is it for sale? Because there are no students. Because the sale price of that house was the previous owner bought it with the idea that they're going to get $6,600 in rent. And so what they paid compensated for that kind of rent. They're not going to be able to get that kind of rent now. So we have a very interesting, if you want to know what the impact of students is in Santa Cruz, just look at the housing market now.
But the housing market seems to be booming.
It's booming, but the houses are becoming available.
Ah, okay, so they're more on the market.
To families who want them. Now, which families? Well, that's the other downside of it, is that the families who can afford to live in Santa Cruz are the ones who work over the hill. So the jobs that pay are over the hill. So we're in rough shape here in Santa Cruz because we're listed as among the the least affordable communities. I think the seventh least affordable community.
Yeah, I
in
thought
the
it was higher.
World.
Oh, okay.
Based on what people make here and what they pay here for rent.
Uh-huh.
Now, the fact is that the exceptions are the ones who drive over the hill. They can afford to pay more. But you can't, to live and work in Santa Cruz, you had to have, someone once said the best time to plant an apple tree is 15 years ago. Well, if you want to work and live here in Santa Cruz, you better have arrived here 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, but then to jump to a somewhat different question, I mean, what is the potential, for ADUs in Santa Cruz? Let's make several assumptions, right? That that the price, the cost is affordable. I want to come back to that $350,000. Yep. But let's just say that, there's a price point that's affordable. There are various kinds of, attractive financing options. And people have backyards. I mean, how many ADUs do you think it would be possible to accommodate in the city?
Here's the state in the last few years has looked at communities like Santa Cruz, communities that have attempted to shut the door on moderate income housing, and just said, this won't stand. We're going to make it possible for people to create affordable housing. There people in big cities say, oh, yeah, we need developers to come in near transit centers and build high-rise apartments. Well, that's not really Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is a small town, and what we need to do is look at what we've got, which is single-family residential neighborhoods, and how do we create our housing there. And what the state has said is that every single-family neighborhood in the city of Santa Cruz is eligible for an ADU. And every single lot in residential lot in Santa Cruz is also eligible for what the state calls a junior ADU. So now, if you have that '60s ranch house with an attached garage, you can convert your garage to a junior ADU, and you can then build a regular ADU in your backyard. So that's two new units, small. A junior ADU can't be more than 500 square feet. And a junior ADU could also be, you look at your master bedroom suite. It's a bedroom with a big bedroom with a bathroom. As long as that bedroom has a door to the outside, you're allowed to just go in, according to the state, and the city hasn't quite caught up with this yet, but according to the state, you're allowed to go in with a plumbing permit and put a kitchenette in that space and rent it separate from the house. So, every single family lot in the city of Santa Cruz can now have three, not one, but three dwelling units on it. So that's significant. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to want to do that. But but in the course of events, think of how many boomerang kids there are. How many, my son lives in New York City, sort of. He's been since the... Since the pandemic started, he's been living here in Santa Cruz. So we were able to accommodate him here. And more people are going to want to be accommodating their families.
I have to take another break, okay? You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz and KSQD.org streaming on the internet. Over to you, Dan.
The Volunteer Center has opened their emergency volunteer station, and they're in close contact with the Office of Emergency Services and Animal Services and have identified several critical volunteer needs. Right now, their greatest need is for volunteers at the donation centers in Watsonville and Santa Cruz. And if you'd like more information about current needs or more info on how to help, you can call them at 831-427-5070 or at scvolunteernow.org. And Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs could be used more help in preparing and sharing meals. Folks who are fleeing the fires and those who have been recently evicted have increased their need to respond. They also anticipate another increase in people seeking food and clothing when the Red Cross evacuation shelters close down after the threat of fires diminished. And if you're interested in helping, you can email their volunteer coordinator, Emma, at santacruzfoodnotbombs@gmail.com. And now back to Sustainability Now.
Yeah, this is Ronnie Lipschitz on Sustainability Now. My guest today is Santa Cruz architect Mark Premack, and we're talking about housing in Santa Cruz and focusing on accessory dwelling units. So, Mark, you mentioned an ADU that costs $350,000, which seems to be, you know, somewhere around the going price these days, somewhere between $250,000 and $350,000 for an ADU, which strikes me as being outside of the reach of even most homeowners. So, first of all, why are they so expensive? I mean, you blamed, you know, government regulation, but that certainly isn't the bulk of the cost.
Well, it's a large part of it. It's a very large part of it, and it's not. I mean, this isn't, you know, just me with, you know, some outrageous opinion here. The state is conscious of this. It's a state that puts through the building codes and the energy codes. Mm-hmm. The state legislature understands that this is a real problem, and so what they've done is they've passed legislation requiring that within the next couple of years there will be a new building code for ADUs and small units, that we will no longer be applying this massive document, these incredibly onerous rules to every little habitation in our community. It was the rules were so disproportionate with what we were creating that the thing about building codes is that they're kind of iterative, that the building department says, oh, you want to build an ADU in your backyard, we're worried about we want you to have a geotechnical report, you know, we want you to have a soils report because, you know, this is earthquake country, and the homeowner says, well, okay, what does that cost? Well, it costs $5,000 or $6,000. But it's not just $5,000 or $6,000, because we know what the soil types are in the city of Santa Cruz. We don't need to have a report on every property in Santa Cruz. But when a soils engineer is involved, then the soils engineer has professional liability. So they have to put lots of disclaimers in the report and lots of requirements in, so that the engineer can then engineer it to a higher standard so that everybody's ass is covered. Forgive me. And so that CYA multiplies as it goes up the chain. So that $6,000 soils report results in $35,000 of additional cost by the time you're done. And so that's just one example, but that's how it works. So the state has said, no, this isn't working. We actually want, we're not trying to create rules to keep people from doing this. We want to create the rules that will allow people to do this. And so within a couple of years, there's going to be a building code expressly for small units and ADUs. And we, you know, so many of these rules sound good. It's about safety, it's about health and all that stuff, but it's very difficult to prove that they have any real lasting benefit. One of those areas is energy. You know, we're all concerned about everything from the ozone layer to oceans rising. And so we've decided it sounds really good to say that the state of California is moving towards net zero by the year 2030, which means that every home, every building is going to be autonomous. It consumes zero energy. And it's a wonderful goal. It's a great thing to talk about. But there's a price tag that goes with everything. So as I've said, I've got an op-ed in the paper today, that's the equivalent of saying let them eat cake. We have a housing crisis, and we need this housing, but the housing has to be super expensive housing. Well, it makes you feel good to say that, but the net result is that nothing gets built. Not only does nothing get built, but it means that the existing houses, those houses built in the 40s and 50s and 60s with the inefficient heaters and no insulation, become more and more valuable just because they exist. And so the people who buy them don't have the resources to upgrade the heating system or the plumbing system. So we're not getting any net gain from net zero by imposing these regulations. But those regulations have kept people from converting garages to ADUs. It's made it impossible for people who had illegal units to legalize them, because when you go to legalize a unit, our brilliant building department says, bring it up to current code. Well, in order to do that, you pretty much have to demolish it and start all over again. So when the city says, well, we'll work with people to get it legalized, essentially what they're doing is they're abating what is otherwise perfectly good housing in many cases. So it's I'm not overplaying the role of government in driving up the cost of housing. And my example is $38,000 to convert a garage. There's no reason why such a conversion today couldn't be in that same neighborhood of cost.
So what's the situation here in Santa Cruz in terms of you know, building codes and the department? With the recent legislation, the city has also been trying to reform its regulations applying to ADUs. Where did things stand with that?
Well, right now the city is more or less just chasing the state. The state passes legislation saying you have to do this. The governor signs it into law, and most of what we've seen from the city has been you know, they're positive steps forward mandated by the state legislature. So we're not, you know, in 2003 we were ahead of the pack, we were leading the way. Now we're at the trailing edge. Essentially, we're just, you know, we're not doing, you know, all the legislation, because I follow it all because I'm very interested in it, and I've communicated with some of the state senators and assembly people who are behind this. Pretty much all of that legislation, somewhere in among the clauses, it says this legislation in no way precludes the city from doing more to encourage this kind of housing. And that's gone completely ignored by people, the politicians and the administrators in Santa Cruz. There's so much more we could do. You know, we've had, you know, a lot of the units that have been abated in the last year were not abated because they were unsafe. There have only been, like, I think 4 or 5 of the hundreds of units that were up for abatement were abated because they were unsafe. Many of them were abated because one of the clauses in our ordinance says that that the owner of the property has to live on the premises.
Right.
And the fact is that a lot of illegal units are not the property's not owner occupied. They'd never been busted. Nobody ever had any complaints with them. They were inspected and found to be perfectly safe. They were being shut down, and the people forced to leave simply because of that clause in the ordinance. And, you know, when we have which I think inarguably a housing crisis, to be closing down perfectly safe units in the city of Santa Cruz because of such a clause is, it's more than regrettable. So the city isn't doing what it could do. It should certainly as much as it could do, it could have put a moratorium on the abatement of safe units. It could, and the state has laid out the groundwork in their legislation for doing that, granting people a 5-year amnesty program where they can continue to keep their units going until those new codes come into effect. The city's rental inspection has a checklist of what makes a safe unit in Santa Cruz. They could apply that same checklist to the legalization of other units and get more onto the tax rolls and get more people in housing. There's a lot that the city could do that it's not doing, and it's just inertia, I'm afraid. You know, it's people just continue, you know, in motion until something comes along and jogs them a little. And you know, will our housing crisis eventually jog some of those people? Will the fires in the county jog some of that? That kind of intransigence, that kind of the bunker mentality that exists in planning and building departments, where they're defending Santa Cruz against people who want to create housing. I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen. It's something that I, like I said, I write about, and I try to challenge people to ask themselves, who are we defending our environment from? We're keeping ourselves from living the lives that healthy lives that we need to live, and accommodating the people of this community. So, I think that a lot of it has to do with the standards that we set.
You know, in your column today, you talked about how did you put it? You were expressing second thoughts on the nature and organization of the city's housing regulatory system and agencies, especially with respect to systemic exclusion through zoning and other such mechanisms. Is that still going on?
Well, what I said in the piece is that when we talk about systemic racism or systemic inequity, it's easy to point to the disdain on the face of a police officer or the haughtiness of an official, but that exclusion is written into our ordinances, and planning departments and building departments kind of evolve over time, and people come to work in the city, what they've got, or the county, what they have, is a rule book.
Right.
And they keep their job and they hold on. They have job security to the degree that they stick to the rules.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, it's the, we used to talk about community policing and say that we really want to have police with their feet on the ground in the neighborhoods, getting to know people, understanding, so there's a name and a face put to the police force that people in every neighborhood know who their cops are, know who they can talk to. It's a personalized thing. Well, we don't have community planning or community building in Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz County. They're remote, they're bunkered, they sit behind locked doors now. In both the county and the city, and they stick to the rules. They are what the people who are hired to kind of fix these problems called, they're literalists. They just look at the rule book and they said, the code says this, you have to do this. And I've been in situations where we said, well, there's a conflict in the code. This chapter says this, this chapter says that, and we've been told, well, you have to do both. That's the level of kind of paranoia that exists.
Mm-hmm.
So for a professional like myself who's fairly conversant with the code, that's one thing. It's difficult and it's frustrating. But imagine, a homeowner trying to get something built or a victim of a fire trying to rebuild their house. And every time they submit plans, it comes back with 50 notes to change this and do this and add this. And that's what I'm writing about now is what for next week is, what those fire victims are going to be facing.
Yeah.
So it is systemic. That's what systemic means. And that's why it's so difficult to root out.
I thought the point that you made, though, about, the origins of zoning and building codes and regulations in the structural racism of the 20th century, it's an interesting point. And, of course, the president has been railing against what, in essence, is critical race theory. That's essentially what you've written about in that piece, which I thought was actually kind of interesting and provocative.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Well, he's trying to cement his base, the suburbs.
Yeah. Well, that's of course a whole other story. And why did UCSC get put here in the first place? I got to take another break, and then I'll come back, and I have a question, and then I want to change the subject for the last part of the show. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz and the Central Coast, and KSQD.org, streaming on the Internet. Dan, it's your show.
Thanks, Ronnie. I'd like to give you a Central Coast COVID update. Hair salons, barbershops, and malls may open indoors with modifications to protect the health and safety of staff and the public. Other personal care services such as nails and waxing are still not permitted indoors at this time. As of Saturday, Santa Cruz County reports 261 active cases. Monterey County has over 2,800 active cases. 624 individuals have required hospitalization in the two counties, and 65 people have died. to help slow the spread of COVID, you're reminded to stay at home except for essentials and wash your hands. Keep 6 feet of distance from those not in your household. Wear a face covering, don't gather in groups, and get tested if you have symptoms. For general info on COVID-19, you can call 211 or text coronavirus to 211-211 or visit santacruzhealth.org/coronavirus. And now back to Sustainability Now.
Yeah, this is Ronnie Lipschitz. You're listening to Sustainability Now. My guest today is Santa Cruz architect Mark Primack. We've been talking about accessory dwelling units, building regulations, and the like. Mark, one of my colleagues wanted me to ask you to talk a bit about whether ADUs might offer a way to provide housing to farm workers in the South County, you know, around Watsonville.
Well, that's an interesting one. Years ago I worked with Paige Smith to, when he was first conceptualizing Community House. Over at, where the homeless, Housing Now, is. And we modeled, we had an original design that didn't get built, but the original design was modeled after farm worker housing. You know, it was how do we give autonomy to people, in kind of not bare bones, but just simple private shelter to people within a community environment where they can get the support they need and while still having some agency of their own. And so what are the models for creating that? When you say farm worker housing, are we talking about farm worker housing for a migrant population or a permanent population? Because, there's certainly efforts at, for affordable housing that have through nonprofit agencies that's gone on in Watsonville. But I will say that my mother-in-law lives next door, moved to Santa Cruz 10 years ago from Watsonville, from a house that she'd lived in for 54 years, and raised her family, including my wife there. And her neighborhood, I've watched her neighborhood over the years evolve, people, the Latinx community, as they achieve home ownership in Watsonville, oftentimes they find ways to accommodate their extended families in the single family houses they buy. They don't need to be instructed in how to accommodate themselves. They are resourceful people who know how to do it, just as the population of nonconformists and hippies who came to Santa Cruz in the 60s and 70s, they knew how to accommodate themselves. They built ADUs. The way to accommodate farm worker housing and housing, affordable housing, is to let people do it. Find ways to let people do it. Mm-hmm. I went to architecture school at a time when they were starting to blow up public housing projects. The term back east, the term project, was not a positive term. It was we were creating monolithic ghettos essentially and isolating people. And I think it's just my liberal upbringing. I'm an integrationist. I think we should all live together in one community, and there's room for everybody. And it's our job, if we already have space, to make room for others, and that's our responsibility. And so, and that's why I put so much stock in ADUs and junior ADUs, because it's not letting somebody else do it. It's not telling a developer that he has to create all the affordable housing we need in Santa Cruz. It's not telling, looking for funny money from the state or the feds, because that's not going to be forthcoming anytime soon. How do we house ourselves? And the way we do it is self-build. And the degree that planning departments and building departments make it impossible for people to do that is the degree that they are working against the community.
So, actually, this is a good segue into the last thing I wanted to talk about. In your August 2nd column in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, you wrote somewhat poignantly, and I want to quote you at some length here, Young people are beginning to recognize themselves as the collateral damage of an economy they're being asked to defend, one that never truly included them. This economy cannot be sustained by brute force, dumb inertia, blind optimism, the fragility of art, or the calculations of science or surveillance. And then you mention embracing, and this is the second part of the quote, indigenous models of desiring little and wasting less. And I thought that was an interesting idea. And can you say something more about that?
Yeah. You know, there's people are enamored of prefab houses. And isn't this great? We just, isn't this economical? We're going to just buy our house from a factory and plunk it down. And I am not so enthusiastic about that. Because I think that, there's a lot of beautiful books up at the university library. One of them is on the vernacular architecture of Tunisia. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote at the very beginning of the book that says, it's a folk saying that says, in Tunisia, everyone is an architect. It's because everybody builds their house. Uh-huh. And you know, to me, in a perfect world, I mean, I live in a house I built, and it's one of the greatest experiences of my life, and I appreciate it every day and enjoy it every day and live with my mistakes every day. But I would wish that on everybody, that they could build their own house. So to me, that's the gold standard. If you could create your own living space, you know, I don't want to start quoting Heidegger or anything, but that is a wonderful way to live. And so the degree to which we know don't relegate housing to a factory somewhere, and our codes have pretty much worked really hard to do that. We don't have builders anymore. We have people who more or less assemble buildings from pre-made parts. You know, as an architect for 40 years here, I tried very hard for a long time to limit my range to Santa Cruz. I only wanted to work in Santa Cruz. And one of the reasons I did that, I made that choice, is because I wanted to support local builders, local carpenters, local craftspeople. I wanted to keep them employed so that this community had those resources, critical resources to the health of the community, to be able to build their own housing. So the degree to which we can do that is the degree, just as we talk about food security, housing security is about being able to provide your own housing and not being dependent on a corporate structure 1,000 miles away. So to me, that is, when I talk about indigenous models, I'm talking about ADUs. I'm talking about junior ADUs. I'm talking about people figuring out how to, having resources in the community, people who can make a living doing this for people and helping people, people who are known in the community, who have a relationship with the building department, and can go in easily and create ADUs. The idea of we're going to buy these things and ship them in. That may be attractive to some people, but I don't see it as a sustainable solution in the long term. It's what we can do as a community and the skills that we can have. I mean, there's a previous piece that I wrote talking about a friend in Bonny Doon who stayed and fought to save his house and in the fires, and he'd done it twice. He did it in the Martin Fire as well. And we need to develop those strengths. We need to develop those resources as a community so that we can help one another. Because when you build an ADU for your kids and your kids grow up and leave, you get a neighbor down the street who's got kids younger than yours who need that same housing. And you get, I know of people who have housing on their property that they've rented to the elderly parents of neighbors of theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about a neighborhood network of housing. I mean, we talk about preserving neighborhoods, but what is a neighborhood if not cooperation among neighbors? And housing is a big part of that. I've talked to people at Habitat for Humanity about who are into creating ADUs, although they've run into huge stumbling blocks trying to do that in the city of Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it be wonderful if we could fund the creation of ADUs as housing for people transitioning out of homelessness, So there are people in our neighborhoods who, among other things, might be available to, again, we're an aging community. What if there are people in our neighborhoods who are available to do yard work, who are available to do repairs, available to do some maintenance, that we knew and trusted? This is what neighborhoods are. I grew up in a working class neighborhood back in New England. That's my impression of a neighborhood. In a neighborhood, you know everybody, and you can count on people.
Well, you know the joke in New England, you can't run for public office unless your family's been there for 300 years. And in California, you can be here for a day, and it's okay. Transience is a problem.
The zoning board, people would stand up. There was like this craze. I don't even know where it came from. People would get up and say, I've lived in Santa Cruz for 2 years. And, I was from New England. I was going, 2 years? In Rhode Island, I'd be embarrassed to say that.
Right. I wanted to just say one thing. You're talking here about something like sweat equity and building ADUs, I guess. But you said you built your own home, and my wife and I took a house building course 40 years ago, up in the Sierra foothills, and I learned that I should not build a house, and it was the best few thousand dollars I ever spent, and I wanted to do it, but not all of us are kitted out to do that.
Well, it's not everybody's circumstances are different. The fact is I built a house at a time when I couldn't afford to buy one. I've never bought a house. It was pure sweat equity. It was the only way I would ever own a house in Santa Cruz. So that was just my circumstances. And I was fortunate that I had, I worked in a construction community, and I had people who were, who would help me. I was a general contractor, but I had a lot of people holding my hand.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we're out of time, and so I want to thank you for being on Sustainability Now.
Pleasure.
Listeners, you can learn more about Mark and related topics at ksqd.org, the Sustainability Now podcast, and the website of the Sustainable Systems Research Foundation. So on my next show, join me when I welcome Mireya Gomez-Contreras and Anna Rasmussen, who are co-directors of Esperanza Community Farms, dedicated to promoting healthy eating and economic justice in the Pajaro Valley by supplying sustainably farmed, affordable produce for traditionally excluded people of limited income, grown by former foreign workers newly trained in organic practices. And by the way, there was a lovely photo essay by Shmuel Thayer about Esperanza Farms in yesterday, Saturday's Sentinel, although I haven't been able to find the complete version online. So that's on Sunday, September 20th, 5 to 6 p.m., right here on KSQD 90.7 FM and ksqd.org, streaming on the Internet. And as a reminder for those of you who get up with the sun, although, again, as I note, the sun is rising later and later every morning, the shows from the 5 to 6 p.m. Sunday slot, and that's Sustainability Now and Be Bold America, are rebroadcast the following Tuesday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. If you'd like to listen to previous broadcasts of Sustainability Now, you can find them at ksqd.org/sustainabilitynow, and now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Pocket Casts, among other podcast sites. I want to thank Dan Nowacki for today's excellent engineering and everyone else at the station who makes this show possible. So until the next every other Sunday, Sustainability Now.
Light the fire, you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard, now everything